morning, good afternoon. It's Rod McClure back, and we've just finished a health chat with Bent Hart. That's available at our website. It was dealing with menopause, and as I said to Bent on air, I truly think one of the best health chats that we have done over the many years that we've been doing them. But at any rate, before we go any further with our reading of Nicholas Nickleby, a word from our sponsors.
Long-term Braidwood FM sponsor, Hockey's Braidwood, have a tilt tray that has a capability to carry 20-foot shipping containers and anything around 12.5 tonne. Hockey's can also supply you with bulk water deliveries, gravel, and they have a Kanga Mini for hire. You can phone the office on 4842 2286 or Stephen Hockey on 0429 422 286.
David! Where are you?
I'm over here behind all the boxes and the old piano.
I really think we need to get rid of some of this junk, don't you?
Junk? It's not junk, woman.
I know. I'll call Braidwood and District Storage. They have a range of storage units and you can access your treasures 24 hours, 7 days a week. Call us today for a quote on 0407 701 788. Braidwood and District Storage, proud sponsors of Braidwood FM.
Braidwood Servicemen's Club,
your local friendly club.
Whether you're looking for a round of golf, a delicious meal, or a drink with friends, the Braidwood Servicemen's Club boasts a range of recreational and sporting facilities to cater for every taste.
The restaurant provides Chinese and Australian meals and is open for lunch and dinner Tuesday to Sunday.
Braidwood Servicemen's Club, 4842 2108.
Located on the corner of Coronation Avenue and Victory Street, Braidwood.
A sponsor of
Braidwood FM.
Located on 28 acres of natural bushland beside the pristine Mongalo River, Tombara is conveniently located only 15 minutes drive from the historic town of Braidwood, just over an hour from Canberra and 50 minutes from Batemans Bay. More energetic outdoor options are some wonderful bushwalking opportunities or in Braidwood, a round of golf, the Heritage Walk or the Braidwood Art Galleries. You can contact the manager on 0448 533 616. Tom Barra, proud to be a sponsor of Braidwood FM 88.9.
And a big thank you, as always, to our sponsors who help keep our little station going. Well, we've been reading Nicholas Nickleby, and Nicholas has finally made it to Dothboys Hall, where in Chapter 7 he gets to meet Mr. and Mrs. Squeers at home. Mr. Squeers, being safely landed, left Nicholas and the boys standing with the luggage in the road to amuse themselves by looking at the coach as it changed horses, while he ran into the tavern and went through the leg-stretching process at the bar. After some minutes, he returned with his legs thoroughly stretched, if the hue of his nose and a short hiccup afforded any criterion. And at the same time, there came out of the yard a rusty pony chaise and a cart driven by two labouring men. "I put the boys and the boxes into the cart," said Squeers, rubbing his hands, "and this young man and me will go on in the chaise. Get in, Nickleby." Nicholas obeyed, Mr. Squeers with some difficulty inducing the pony to obey also. They started off, leaving the cartload of infant misery to follow at leisure. "Are you cold, Nickleby?" inquired Squeers after they had travelled some distance in silence. "Rather, sir, I must say." "Well, I don't find fault with that," said Squeers. "It's a long journey, this weather."
Is it much farther to Dothboys Hall, sir?" asked Nicholas.
"Oh, about 3 mile from here," replied Squeers. "But you needn't call it a hall here." Nicholas coughed as if he would like to know why. "The fact is, it ain't a hall," observed Squeers dryly.
"Oh, indeed," said Nicholas, whom this piece of intelligence much astonished.
"No," replied Squeers. "We call it a hall up in London because it sounds better, but they don't know it by that name in these parts. A man may call his house an island if he likes. There's no Act of Parliament against that, I believe?"
"I believe not, sir," rejoined Nicholas. Squeers eyed his companion slyly at the conclusion of this little dialogue, and finding that he had grown thoughtful and appeared in no ways disposed to volunteer any observations, contented himself with lashing the pony until they reached their journey's end.
"Jump out," said Squeers. "Hello there, come and put this horse up, and be quick, will you?"
While the schoolmaster was uttering these and other impatient cries, Nicholas had time to observe that the building, or the school, was a long, cold-looking house, one story high, with a few straggling outbuildings behind and a barn and a stable adjoining. After the lapse of a minute or two, the noise of somebody unlocking the yard gate was heard, and presently a tall, lean boy with a lantern in his hand issued forth.
"Is that you, Smike?" inquired Squeers.
"Yes, sir," replied the boy.
"Then why the devil didn't you come out before?"
"Oh, please, sir, I fell asleep over the fire, sir," answered Smike with humility.
"Fire? What fire? Where's there a fire?" demanded the schoolmaster sharply.
Only in the kitchen, sir," replied the boy. "Missus said I was sitting up, I might go in there for a warm."
"Well, your missus is a fool," retorted Squeers. "You'd have been a deuce deal more wakeful in the cold, I'd engage."
By this time Mr. Squeers had dismounted, and after ordering the boy to see to the pony and to take care that he hadn't any more corn that night, he told Nicholas to wait at the front door a minute while he went around to let him in. A host of unpleasant misgivings which had been crowding upon Nicholas during the whole journey thronged into his mind with redoubled force when he was left alone. His great distance from the home, and the impossibility of reaching it, except on foot, should he ever feel so anxious to return, presented itself to him in most alarming colours. And as he looked up at the dreary house and the dark windows, and upon the wild country round, covered with snow, he felt a depression of heart and spirit which he had never experienced before.
"Now then," cried Speak Squeers, poking his head out the front door, "where are you, Nickleby?"
"Here, sir," replied Nicholas.
"Well, come in, come in," said Squeers. "The wind blows in at this door fit to knock a man off his legs."
Nicholas sighed and hurried in. Mr. Squeers, having bolted the door to keep it shut, ushered him into a small parlour, scantily furnished with a few chairs, a yellow map hung against the wall, and a couple of tables, one of which bore some preparations for supper, while on the other a tutor's assistant, a Murray's grammar, half a dozen cards of terms, and a worn letter directed to Wackford Squeers Esquire were arranged in picturesque confusion. They had not been in this apartment a couple of minutes when a female bounced into the room and, seizing Mr. Squeers by the throat, gave him two loud kisses, one close after the other, like a postman's knock. The lady, who was of a large, raw-boned figure, was about half a head taller than Mr. Squeers, and was dressed in a dimity night jacket, with her hair in papers. She had also a dirty nightcap on, relieved by a yellow cotton handkerchief, which she had tied under the chin.
"How is my Squeery?"
said this lady in a playful manner, and a very hoarse voice.
"Quite well, my love," replied Squeers. "How's the cows?"
"Oh, they're all right, every one of them," answered the lady.
"Aye, and the pigs," said Squeers.
"As well as they were when you went away."
"Oh, come now, that's a blessing," said Squeers, pulling off his greatcoat. "The boys are all as they were, I suppose?"
"Oh, yes, they're well enough," replied Mrs.
Squeers snappishly.
"That young Pitcher's had a fever."
"No," exclaimed Squeers. "Damn the boy, he's always at something of that sort."
"Never was such a boy, I do believe," said Mrs. Squeers. "Whatever he has is always catching, too. I say it's obstinacy, and nothing shall ever convince me that it isn't. I'll beat it out of him, and I told you that 6 months ago."
"Oy, so you did, my love," rejoined Squeers. "Well, try what can be done."
Pending these little endearments, Nicholas had stood awkwardly enough in the middle of the room, not very well knowing whether he was expected to retire into the passage or to remain where he was. He was now relieved from his perplexity by Mr. Squeers.
"Aye, this is the new young man, my dear," said the gentleman.
"Oh,"
replied Mrs. Squeers, nodding her head at Nicholas and eyeing him coldly from top to toe.
"You'll take a meal with us tonight," said Squeers, "and go among the boys tomorrow morning.
You can give him a shake down here tonight, can't you?"
"Well, we must manage it somehow," replied the lady. "You don't mind how you sleep, I suppose, sir?"
No, indeed," replied Nicholas. I'm not particular."
"Well, that's lucky," said Mrs. Squeers,
and as the lady's humour was considered to lie chiefly in retort, Mr. Squeers laughed heartily and seemed to expect that Nicholas should do the same. After some further conversation between the master and mistress relative to the success of Mr. Squeers' trip and the young people who had paid and the people who had made default in payment, a young servant girl brought in a Yorkshire pie and some cold beef, which being set upon the table, the boy Smike appeared with a jug of ale. Mr. Squeers was emptying his greatcoat pockets of letters to different boys and other small documents which he had brought down in them. The boy glanced with an anxious and timid expression, and the papers as if a sickly hope that one among them might relate to him. The look was a very painful one, and went to Nicholas's heart at once, for it told a long and very sad history. It induced him to consider the boy more attentively, and he was surprised to observe the extraordinary mixture of garments which formed his dress. Although he could not have been less than 18 or 19 years old, and was tall for that age, he wore a skeleton suit, such as usually put upon very little boys, and which, though most absurdly short in the arms and legs, was quite wide enough for his attenuated frame. In order that the lower part of his legs might be in perfect keeping with this singular dress, he had a very large pair of boots, originally made for tops, which might have been once worn by some stout farmer, but were now too patched and tattered for a beggar. Heaven knows how long he'd been there, but he still wore the same linen which he had first taken down, for round his neck was a tattered child's frill, only half concealed by a coarse man's neckerchief. He was lame, and as he feigned to be busy in arranging the table, glanced at the letters with a look so keen and yet so dispirited and hopeless that Nicholas could hardly bear to watch him.
"And what are you bothering about there, Smike?" cried Mr. Squeers. "Let the things alone, can't you?"
"Yes, sir," replied the youth, pressing his hands together as though to control by force the nervous wandering of his fingers.
Is there...
"Well,"
said Squeers, have you... Did anybody... Has nothing been heard about me?"
"Oi, divil a bit,"
replied Squeers testily. The lad withdrew his eyes and, putting his hand to his face, moved towards the door.
"Not a word," resumed Squeers. "Oi, and there never will be. Now this is a pretty sort of thing, isn't it, that you should have been left here all these years and no money paid after the first 6, nor no notice taken, nor clue to be got who you belong to. It's a pretty sort of thing that I should feel a great fellow like you and never hope to get one penny for it, isn't it?"
The boy put his hand to his head, as if he were making an effort to recollect something, and then, looking vacantly at his questioner, gradually broke into a smile and limped away.
"I'll tell you what, Squeers," remarked his wife as the door closed, "I think the young chap's turning silly."
"I hope not," said the schoolmaster. "For he's a handy fellow out of doors, and worth his meat and drink, anyway. I should think he'd have wit enough for us, though, if he was. But come, let us have supper, for I'm hungry and tired, and I want to get to bed."
The reminder brought in an exclusive steak for Mr. Squeers, who speedily proceeded to do it ample justice. Nicholas drew up his chair, but his appetite was effectually taken away.
"How's the steak, Squeers?"
said Mrs. S.
"Oi, tender as a lamb," replied Squeers. "Have a bit."
"I couldn't eat a morsel," replied his wife. "What'll the young man take, my dear?"
"Oi, whatever he likes, that's present," rejoined Squeers
in a most unusual burst of generosity.
"What do you say, Mr. Knuckleby?"
inquired Mrs. Squeers. I'll take a little of the pie, if you please," replied Nicholas. A very little, for I'm not hungry."
"Well, it's a pity to cut the pie if you're not hungry, isn't it?"
said Mrs. Squeers.
"Will you try a bit of beef?"
"Oh, whatever you please," replied Nicholas abstractedly. "It's all the same to me."
Mrs. Squeers looked vastly gracious on receiving this reply, and nodding to Squeers as much as to say that she was glad to find the young man knew his station, assisted Nicholas to a slice of meat with her own fair hands.
"Ale, Squeery?"
inquired the lady, winking and frowning to give him to understand that the question propounded was whether Nicholas should have ale and not whether he, Squeers, should take any.
"Oh, certainly," said Squeers, retelegraphing in the same manner. "A glassful."
So Nicholas had a glassful, and being occupied with his own reflections, drank it in happy innocence of all the foregone proceedings.
"Uncommon juicy steak, that," said Squeers,
as he laid down his knife and fork after plying it in silence for some time.
"It's prime meat," rejoined his lady. "I bought a good large piece of it myself for purpose for..."
"Aye, for what?"
exclaimed Squeers hastily.
"Not for the..." "Oh, no, no, not for them," rejoined Mrs. Squeers. "On purpose for you, against you came home. Lor, you didn't think I would have made such a mistake as that."
"Upon my word, dear, I didn't know what you were going to say," said Squeers, who had turned pale.
You needn't make yourself uncomfortable," remarked his wife, laughing heartily. "To think that I should be such a noddy. Well..."
This part of the conversation was rather unintelligible, but popular rumour in the neighbourhood asserted that Mr. Squeers, being amiably opposed to cruelty to animals, not unfrequently purchased for boy consumption the bodies of horned cattle who had died a natural death. Possibly he was apprehensive of having unintentionally devoured some choice morsel intended for young gentlemen. Supper being over, and removed by a small servant girl with hungry eyes, Mrs. Squeers retired to lock it up, and also to take into safe custody the clothes of the five boys who had just arrived, and who were halfway up the troublesome flight of steps which leads to death's door in consequence of exposure to the cold. They were then regaled with a light supper of porridge, and stowed away, side by side, in a small bedstead to warm each other, and dream of a substantial meal with something hot after it, if their fancy set that way, which it is not at all improbable that they did. Mr. Squeers treated himself to half a tumbler of brandy and water, made on the liberal half-and-half principle, allowing for the dissolution of the sugar, and his amiable helpmate mixed Nicholas the ghost of a small glassful of the same compound. This done, Mr. and Mrs. Squeers drew close up to the fire, and sitting with their feet on the fender, talked confidentially in whispers, while Nicholas, taking up the tutor's assistant, read the interesting legends in the miscellaneous questions and all the figures into the bargain with as much thought or consciousness of what he was doing as if he had been in a magnetic slumber. At length, Mr. Squeers yawned fearfully and opened that it was high time to go to bed, upon which signal Mrs. Squeers and the girl dragged in a small straw mattress and a couple of blankets and arranged them into a couch for Nicholas.
We'll put you up in your regular bedroom tomorrow, Nickleby," said Squeers. "Let me see. Who sleeps in Brooks's bed, my dear?"
"In Brooks's," said Mrs. Squeers, pondering, "there's Jennings, Little Boulder, Greymarsh, and what's his name?"
"Aye, so there is," rejoined Squeers.
"Yes, Brooks is full."
"Full?" thought Nicholas. "I should think he was." There's a place somewhere I know," said Squeers, "but I can't at this moment call to mind where it is. However, we'll have that all settled tomorrow. Good night, Nickleby. 7 o'clock in the morning, mind."
"I shall be ready, sir," replied Nicholas. "Good night."
"I'll come in myself and show you where the well is," said Squeers. "You'll always find a little bit of soap on the kitchen window that belongs to you."
Nicholas opened his eyes, but not his mouth, and Squeers was again going away when he once more turned back.
"I don't know, I am sure," he said, "whose towel to put you on, but if you'll make a shift with something tomorrow morning, Mrs. Squeers will arrange that in the course of the day. My dear, don't you forget."
"I'll take care," replied Mrs. Squeers, "and mind you take care, young man, and get first wash. The teachers ought always to have it, but they get the better of him if they can."
Mr. Squeers then nudged Mrs. Squeers to bring away the brandy bottle lest Nicholas should help himself in the night, and the lady, having seized it with great precipitation, they retired together. Nicholas, being left alone, took half a dozen turns up and down the room in a condition of much agitation and excitement, but growing gradually calmer, sat himself down in a chair and mentally resolved that come what come might, he would endeavour for a time to bear whatever wretchedness might be in store for him, and that remembering the helplessness of his mother and sister, he would give his uncle no plea for deserting them in their need. Good resolutions seldom fail of producing some good effect in the mind from which they spring. He grew less desponding, and, so sanguine and buoyant is youth, even hoped that affairs at Dotheboys Hall might yet prove better than they promised. He was preparing for bed with something like renewed cheerfulness when a sealed letter fell from his coat pocket. In the hurry of leaving London, it had escaped his attention and had not occurred to him since, but it had once brought back to him the recollection of the mysterious behaviour of Newman Noggs. "Dear me," said Nicholas, "what an extraordinary hand." It was directed to himself and written upon very dirty paper, and in such cramped and crippled writing as to be almost illegible. After great difficulty and much puzzling, he contrived to read as follows. "My dear young man, I know the world. Your father did not, or he would not have done me a kindness when there was no hope of return. You do not, or you would not, be bound on such a journey. If you ever want a shelter in London, don't be angry at this. I once thought I never should. They know where I live at the sign of the Crown in Silver Street, Golden Square. It's at the corner of Silver Street and James Street, with a bar door both ways. You can come at night. Once nobody was ashamed. Oh, never mind that, it's all over. Excuse my errors, I should forget how to wear a whole coat now. I have forgotten my old ways. My spelling may have gone with them. Newman Noggs. P.S. If you should go near Barnard Castle, there is a good ale at the King's Head. Say you know me, and I am sure they will not charge you for it. You may say Mr. Noggs there, for I was a gentleman then. I was indeed." It may be a very undignified circumstance to record, but after he had folded this letter and placed it in his pocketbook, Nicholas Nickleby's eyes were dimmed with a moisture that might have been taken for tears. Chapter 8 of the Internal Economy of Dotheboy Hall. A ride of 200-and-odd miles in severe weather is one of the best softeners of a hard bed that ingenuity can devise. Perhaps it is even a sweetener of dreams for those which hovered over the rough couch of Nicholas and whispered their airy nothings in his ear were of an agreeable and happy kind. He was making his fortune very fast indeed when the faint glimmer of an expiring candle shone before his eyes, and a voice he had no difficulty in recognising as part and parcel of Mr. Squeers admonished him that it was time to rise. "Oh, it's past seven, Nickleby," said Mr. Squeers. "Has morning come already?" asked Nicholas, sitting up in bed. "Aye, that it has," replied Squeers, "and ready iced too. Now, Nickleby, come, tumble up, will you?" Nicholas needed no further admonition, but tumbled up at once and proceeded to dress himself by the light of the taper, which Mr. Squeers carried in his hand. "Oh, here's a pretty go," said the gentleman. "The pump's froze." "Indeed," said Nicholas, not much interested in the intelligence. "Yes," replied Squeers. "Well, you can't wash yourself this morning." "Not wash myself?" exclaimed Nicholas. "No, not a bit of it," rejoined Squeers tartly. "So you must be content with giving yourself a dry polish till we break the ice in the well, and we can get a bucket full out for the boys. Don't stand staring at me, but do look sharp, will you?" Offering no further observation, Nicholas huddled on his clothes. Squeers, meanwhile, opened the shutters and blew the candle out, when the voice of his amiable consort was heard in the passage demanding admittance. "Oi, come in, my love," said Squeers. Mrs. Squeers came in, still habited in the primitive night jacket which had displayed the symmetry of her figure on the previous night, and further ornamented it with a beaver bonnet of some antiquity, which she wore with much ease and lightness on the top of the nightcap before mentioned. "Drat the things," said the lady, opening the cupboard. "I can't find the school spoon anywhere." "Oh, never mind, my dear," observed Squeers in a soothing manner. "It's of no consequence." "No consequence? Why, how you talk," retorted Mrs. Squeers sharply. "Isn't it brimstone morning?"
"Oh, I forgot, my dear," rejoined Squeers. "Oh, yes, it certainly is. We purify the boys' bloods now and then, Nickleby."
"Purify fiddlesticks ends," said his lady. "Don't think, young man, that we go to the expense of flour of brimstone and molasses just to purify them. Because if you think we carry on the business in that way, you'll find yourself mistaken, and so I tell you plainly."
"My dear," said Squeers, frowning.
"Oh, nonsense," rejoined Mrs. Squeers. "If the young man comes to be a teacher here, let him understand at once that we don't want any foolery about these boys. They have the brimstone and treacle partly because if they hadn't something or other in the way of medicine, they'd always be ailing and giving a world of trouble, and partly because it spoils their appetite and comes cheaper than breakfast and dinner. So it does them good and does us at the same time, and that's fair enough, I'm sure."
As an aside, brimstone, for those who may not know, is sulphur, and it's mixed in with the treacle. It was believed to suppress hunger, and as you'll see, there's good reason for it. Having given this explanation, Mrs. Squeers put her hand into the closet and instituted a stricter search after the spoon, in which Mr. Squeers assisted. A few words passed between them while they were thus engaged, but as their voices were partially stifled by the cupboard, and all Nicholas could distinguish was that Mr. Squeers said what Mrs. Squeers had said was injudicious, and that Mrs. Squeers said that what Mr. Squeers said was stuff. A vast deal of searching and rummaging ensued, and, it proving fruitless, Smike was called in and pushed by Mrs. Squeers and boxed by Mr. Squeers, which course of treatment, brightening his intellect, enabled him to suggest that possibly, Mrs. Squeers might have the spoon in her pocket, as indeed turned out to be the case. As Mrs. Squeers had previously protested, however, that she was quite certain she had not got it, Smike received another box of the ear for presuming to contradict his mistress, together with a promise of a sound thrashing if he were not more respectful in the future, so that he took nothing very advantageous by his motion.
"Aye, a most valuable woman that, Nickleby," said Squeers when his consort had hurried away, pushing the drudge before her.
"Indeed, sir," observed Nicholas.
"I don't know her equal," said Squeers. "I do not know her equal. That woman, Nickleby, is always the same. Always the same bustling, lively, active, saving creature that you see here right before you now."
Nicholas sighed involuntarily at the thought of the agreeable domestic prospect thus opened to him, but Squeers was fortunately too much occupied with his own reflections to perceive it.
"It's my way to see when I'm up in London," continued Squeers, "that to them boys she is a mother. But she is more than a mother to them, 10 times more. She does things for them boys, Nickleby, that I don't believe half the mothers going would do for their own sons."
"I should think they would not, sir," answered Nicholas.
Now the fact was that both Mr. and Mrs. Squeers viewed the boys in the light of their proper and natural enemies, or in other words, they held and considered that their business and profession was to get as much from every boy as could by possibility be screwed out of him. On this point they were both agreed, and behaved in unison accordingly. The only difference between them was that Mrs. Squeers waged war against the enemy openly and fearlessly, and that Squeers covered his rascality, even at home, with a spice of his habitual deceit, as if he really had a notion of some day or other being able to take himself in and persuade his own mind that he was, indeed, a very good fellow.
"Oi, but come," said Squeers, interrupting the progress of some thoughts to his effect in the mind of his usher. "Let's go to the schoolroom and lend me a hand with my school coat, will you?"
Nicholas assisted his master to put on an old fustian shooting jacket, which he took down from a peg in the passage, and Squeers, arming himself with his cane, led the way across a yard to a door in the rear of the house.
"There," said schoolmaster as they stepped in together, "this is our shop, Nickleby."
It was such a crowded scene, and there were so many objects to attract attention, that at first Nicholas stared about him, really without seeing anything at all. By degrees, however, the place resolved itself into a bare and dirty room, with a couple of windows whereof a tenth part might be of glass, the remainder being stopped up with old copybooks and paper. There were a couple of long, rickety desks, cut and notched and inked and damaged in every possible way. Two or three forms, a detached desk for Squeers, and another for his assistant. The ceiling was supported like that of a barn by crossbeams and rafters, and the walls were so stained and discoloured that it was impossible to tell whether they had ever been touched with paint or whitewash. But the pupils, the young noblemen, how the last faint traces of hope, the remotest glimmering of any good to be derived from his efforts in this den, faded from the mind of Nicholas as he looked in dismay around. Pale and haggard faces, lank and bony figures, children with the countenances of old men, deformities with irons upon their limbs, boys of stunted growth and others whose long meagre legs could barely bear their stooping bodies, all crowded on the view together. There were the bleared eye, the hare lip, the crooked foot, and every ugliness or distortion that told of unnatural aversion conceived by parents for their offspring, or of young lives which from the earliest dawn of infancy had been one horrible endurance of cruelty and neglect. There were little faces which should have been handsome, darkened with the scowl of sullen, dogged suffering. There was childhood with the light of its eye quenched, its beauty gone, and its helplessness alone remaining. There were vicious-faced boys, brooding with leaden eyes like malefactors in a jail, and there were young creatures on whom the sins of their frail parents had descended, weeping even for the mercenary nurse they had known, and the lonesome even in their loneliness. With every kindly sympathy and affection blasted in its birth, with every young and healthy feeling flogged and starved down, with every revengeful passion that can fester in swollen hearts, eating its evil way to their core in silence, what an incipient hell was breeding here. And yet this scene, painful as it was, had its grotesque features, which in a less interested observer than Nicholas might have provoked a smile. Mrs. Squeers stood at one of the desks, presiding over an immense basin of brimstone and treacle, of which delicious compound she administered a large instalment to each boy in succession, using for the purpose a common wooden spoon, which might have originally manufactured for some gigantic top, and which widened every young gentleman's mouth considerably, they being all obliged under heavy corporal penalties to take in the whole of the bowl at a gasp. In another corner, huddled together for companionship, were the little boys who had arrived on the preceding night. Three of them in very large leather breeches, and two in old trousers, a something tighter fit than drawers are usually worn. And at no great distance from these was seated the juvenile son and heir of Mr. Squeers, a striking likeness of his father, kicking with great vigour under the hands of Smike, who was fitting upon him a pair of new boots that bore a most suspicious resemblance to those which the least of the little boys had worn on the journey down, as the little boy himself seemed to think, for he was regarding the appropriation with a look of most rueful amazement. Besides these, there was a long row of boys waiting, with countenances of no pleasant anticipation to be treacled, and another file who had just escaped from the infliction, making a variety of wry mouths indicative of anything but satisfaction. The whole were attired in such motley, in ill-sorted, extraordinary garments as would have been irresistibly ridiculous but for the foul appearance of dirt, disorder, and disease with which they were associated. "Now," said Squeers, giving the desk a great rap with his cane, which made half the little boys nearly jump out of their boots, "is that physicking over?"
"Just over," said Mrs.
Squeers, choking the last boy in her hurry and tapping the crown of his head with the wooden spoon to restore him.
"Here, you, Smike, take it away now and look sharp."
Smike shuffled out with the basin, and Mrs. Squeers, having called up a little boy with a curly head, wiped her hands upon it, hurried out after Smike into a species of washhouse where there was a small fire and a large kettle, together with a number of little wooden bowls which were arranged upon a board. Into these bowls Mrs. Squeers, assisted by the hungry servant, poured a brown composition which looked like diluted pincushions without the covers and was called porridge. A minute wedge of brown bread was inserted into each bowl, and when they had eaten their porridge by means of the bread, the boys ate the bread itself and had finished their breakfast, whereupon Mr. Squeers said in a solemn voice, "Oi, for what we have received, may the Lord make us truly thankful," and went away to his own. Nicholas distended his stomach with a bowl of porridge, for much the same reason which induces some savages to swallow earth, lest they should be inconveniently hungry when there is nothing to eat. Having further disposed of a slice of bread and butter allotted to him by virtue of his office, he sat himself down to wait for school time. He could not but observe how silent and sad the boys all seemed to be. There was none of the noise and clamour of a schoolroom, none of its boisterous play or hearty mirth. The children sat crouching and shivering together, and seemed to lack the spirit to move about. The only pupil who evinced the slightest tendency towards locomotion or playfulness was Master Squeers, and as his chief amusement it was to tread upon other boys' toes in his new boots. His flow of spirits was rather disagreeable than otherwise. After some half an hour's delay, Mr. Squeers reappeared, and the boys took their places and their books, of which latter commodity the average might be about 1 to 8 learners. A few minutes having elapsed, during which Mr. Squeers looked very profound, as if he had a perfect apprehension of what was inside all the books, and could say every word of their contents by heart, if only he chose to take the trouble, that gentleman called up the first class. Obedient to the summons, there ranged themselves in front of the schoolmaster's desk half a dozen scarecrows, out at knees and elbows, one of whom placed a torn and filthy book beneath his learned eye. "Oi, this is the first English class in English spelling and philosophy, Nickleby," said Squeers, beckoning Nicholas over to stand beside him. "Well, get up a Latin one and hand that over to you. Now then, where's the first boy?"
Please, sir, he's cleaning the back parlour window," said the temporary head of the philosophical class.
"Aye, so he is, to be sure," rejoined Squeers. "We go upon the practical mode of teaching, Nickleby, the regular education system, CLEAN, clean, verb, active, to make bright, to scour, WIN, win, DER, window, a casement. When the boy knows this out of the book, he goes out and he does it. It's just the same principle as the use of the globe. Where's the second boy?"
Please, sir, he's weeding the garden."
"To be sure," said Squeers, by no means disconcerted. "So he is. B-O-T, bot. T-I-N, tin. Botin. N-E-Y, botany. Noun, substantive, a knowledge of plants. When he has learned that botany means a knowledge of plants, he goes out and knows them. That's our system, Nickleby. What do you think?"
"It's a very useful one, at any rate," answered Nicholas.
"I believe you," rejoined Squeers, not remaking the emphasis of his usher. "Third boy, what's a horse?"
"A beast, sir," replied the boy.
"Oi, so it is," said Squeers. "Ain't it, Nickleby?"
"I believe there is no doubt of that, sir," answered Nicholas.
"Of course there isn't," said Squeers. "A horse is a quadruped, and a quadruped's Latin for beast, as everybody that's gone through the grammar knows, or else where's the use of having grammars at all?"
"Where, indeed?" said Nicholas abstractedly.
"As you're perfect in that," resumed Squeers, turning to the boy, "go and look after my horse, and rub him down well, or I'll rub you down. The rest of the class go and draw water up, till somebody tells you to leave off, for it's washing day tomorrow, and they want the coppers filled."
So saying, he dismissed the first class to their experiments in practical philosophy, and eyed Nicholas with a look half cunning and half doubtful, as if he were not altogether certain what he might think of him by this time.
Well, that's Nicholas Nickleby for this week. Education does seem to have come some distance since then, I would think. Till next Monday, Braidwood, when we'll be back with more of Nicholas Nickleby. Keep well.